cliffcentral.com.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Beyond Ears and Eyes. Yes, that's the Tibetan singing bowls. And you know when you hear that, we are ready to go with some interesting conversation on Cliff Central's Beyond Ears and Eyes. I am Shimane Harris. Our controller today is Palisa Mbuyi.
And I'm Liesl Tom. Also with us in studio is Judy Klippen, Martha Beck Master Coach, author, and most importantly, coming into our topic today, an intuitive empath. Welcome, Judy.
Thanks, Liesl.
How would you define an empath? Let's just start with the concept of an empath.
So an empath is somebody who feels what other people are feeling. So it's different from sympathy, because when you have sympathy for somebody, you can see that they are struggling and you can feel compassion for them. But when you have empathy with somebody, you actually feel what they are feeling. So either because you have felt it before, you've been in a similar situation, or you are experiencing a similar physical or emotional response to that person that you are having empathy for.
So I still battle with it, I know. Is there a difference between just having empathy in general and then constantly living with this feeling of, you know, the fact that you think that you just can't turn it off, kind of vibe where you go, there, that is an empathy. What?
An empath.
Yes.
I think that there are some people who are able to, when it's appropriate, have empathy. So, you know, when you see somebody who is hungry at the traffic lights, mm-hmm. if you feel empathy, you will be able to put yourself in their position, imagine what it must feel like, and give them some money or a jersey or whatever. Some of us, though, feel things very literally and very deeply most of the time. And so with a lot of people, empathy kind of comes and goes as it's appropriate. Whereas with people who are empaths and who are empaths, we kind of in a constant state of empathic feeling.
What's the purpose of being an empath?
Well, I don't know. You'll have to ask God.
Okay. but I mean, for instance, there must be a reason why you have a specific gift.
Yes.
Well, that's what I'm trying
to
say.
So how I make sense of being an empath is that in my work and the work that I do, it helps me.
So you identify as an empath.
Yeah, I am definitely an empath. Okay. Hi, my name's Judy and I'm an empath. For me, it's very helpful in many ways because, say, for instance, a client walks into my room and they are feeling upset about something, but they are so out of touch with their own feelings that they don't realize they're upset. So I'll say to them, hello, how are you feeling today? And they'll say, oh, fine, everything's fine. But I will feel that they are feeling angry or frustrated or sad or depressed or hurt or whatever. And then because I'm experiencing it in my body, I can then say to them, you know, obviously I need to judge it and we need to have a strong enough relationship and it needs to not freak them out too much. But I need to be, I can then say to them, you know, when you walked in, I suddenly started to feel really sad. And I'm wondering if maybe there's something that's making you feel sad that you aren't really paying attention to. Mm. And 9 times out of 10, they'll say, oh, yeah, actually, you're right. I am feeling quite sad, but I just haven't really been aware of it. I often start off with something a bit less scary. So I'll say, I've started to suddenly have a headache or I'm feeling very tired. Tiredness is a big one. I often feel if my clients are tired, and a lot of them are because a lot of them have burnout, they'll walk in and sit down and I will just feel an overwhelming need to put my head down and go to sleep. And then I'll say to them, you're feeling very tired to me.
Okay. But how do you know it's not you whose blood sugar has all of a sudden dropped? How do you know it's your client's feelings?
Well, it's taken me quite a while to be able to, you know what's mine and what's theirs. And I kind of take a mental step back and I say to myself, what is this feeling that I'm feeling? And who does it belong to? And if it belongs to me, then that's fine. I'll own it. But if I can't understand where it's coming from, if it's coming from nowhere and it's not seeming appropriate to where I'm at, then I know that it belongs to the person. And often it just comes like that. I'll be feeling absolutely fine. The person sits down and I will suddenly feel hungry or have a headache or feel like punching someone in the nose or whatever it is. It's a very amazing thing, actually.
So that's your clue. Your clue that it's okay. That's not mine. They just came in with that.
Yeah.
That's quite handy.
It's handy.
And it's handy to know the signals for it. Mm. So I think it's amazing that you can do that. Now, you do mention when they come into your office, what do they come for then? What consultation do they come for?
So I'm a life coach and they come to me for, a range of reasons. Some people come because they mainly come because they're feeling stuck in their lives. Some it'll be in relation to relationships. Some it'll be with work. Some it'll be with old childhood patterns. I specialize in working with adult children who are people who had a childhood that was inconsistent or unpredictable.
Right.
And they have developed a very particular set of coping mechanisms that served them well in childhood but aren't necessarily serving them so well in adulthood.
You know, that's most of us.
Yes. I know. I have an enormous target group.
You have a whole mess of
absolutely.
World.
And interestingly, one of the coping mechanisms that adult children, and I'm one of them, develop is becoming an intuitive empath, because it's almost a survival technique.
Right.
So if you're growing up in a chaotic household, to be an empath or to be an intuitive empath is very useful, because nobody has to come home and say, be careful, dad's in a bad mood, stay out of his way. You can sense it. And so a lot of my clients are actually intuitive empaths, and a lot of the work that I do with them is helping them to manage their empathy, because as lovely as it is for my work and it's very helpful, it also can be completely exhausting.
Mm, I was going to say, Charmaine said it's handy, but it can be completely overwhelming. Mm. Do you teach people how to, can I use the term, turn it off or close it down?
Well, I teach people how to manage it, and it relates to that question that you asked me about how do I know whether it's my own feeling or someone else's, and that's really one of the things that I help them with, is to help them to identify, does this feeling belong to me? And if it doesn't belong to me, then what am I going to do with it? Am I going to give it back to the person? Am I going to put it down? Or am I just going to acknowledge that it isn't mine? It's about being mindful of it, because when you're aware of it, then you don't have to carry it around with you. Carrying people's emotions around with you when you aren't aware of it, that's when it gets exhausting and overwhelming. And that's when we get into all sorts of negative relationship behavior patterns and self-talk and all sorts of exhausting things that...
Okay. So now those that, because you say most of them, because of the coping mechanism, are empaths, do you then teach them how to identify that they are actually an empath? And then do you, for lack of a better expression, kind of equip them with the skills on how to also then use it in future, other than just, saying, look, that's not mine. Because it's actually something that you can use daily.
Absolutely.
Everywhere, if you're aware that you are an empath.
You can definitely use it in a positive and a constructive way, as long as you are aware of it and you are mindful about how you're using it. Because a lot of the reason why people become burnt out is because they are not aware of their empathy, and it is that constant carrying of other people's feelings and emotions that is just wearing them down and exhausting them. So that's one of the key things, actually, that I talk to people about developing a semi-permeable membrane. Those of us who did biology in high school learned about osmosis.
Those of us who still remember.
And so osmosis is the movement of liquid through a particles through a semi-permeable membrane from an area of high density to an area of low density. Well, I don't know, the other way around. Either way, I am, actually, as it turns out. So that's what we need to do, because we empaths from one extreme to the next, because it can be so overwhelming to feel everything that's going on around us. We can sometimes just switch off. And so we try and cut everything out, so we don't let anything in, which is fine because it's keeping the bad stuff out. But unfortunately, it's also keeping the good stuff out. And so I help my clients to develop that semi-permeable membrane, which allows good stuff in but keeps bad stuff out. or stuff that doesn't belong to us out, and keeps the good stuff in, but lets the bad stuff out. Because the problem with a solid membrane is it keeps the bad stuff in as well as keeping the good stuff out.
You just, you know, you touched on something where you said that some people don't know that, you alluded to it, to the fact that they are empaths. So if there's someone at home who probably doesn't know, what would be the signs for them to look out for, to know that they are? Because there are people with a veneer that goes like, but it's that thing of what you just said, I'm keeping everything out. And what kind of advice would you give them? Because it would be nice also to know then how to protect yourself.
Right. So I think that it's, you know, it kind of manifests in two ways if you're unaware of it. The first is to just switch off completely and to kind of cut off. And
one of those hard girls.
Exactly.
Because
are you talking about like meditation switch off?
No, I mean completely just kind of almost as though you're looking through the world through a pane of glass. So you can see what's going on, but you can't hear or feel.
Because you don't want to, it's a choice.
Yeah, because it's just, well, it's not necessarily a conscious choice, but it is a choice. It's a self-protection mechanism because otherwise it's too overwhelming. So if people are feeling like they can see things, but they're not really responding emotionally in a way that they feel should be appropriate, which I think is difficult not to do in this country. You know, every single traffic light we stop at, there's some desperately unhappy, poor, miserable person. And it's very hard to not survive in this country without developing some kind of a distancing mechanism. But that's one, you know, that's one extreme, that if you just can't feel anything, you can't feel happy, you can't feel sad, you can't join in with people around you's joy or sadness. And then the other extreme, of course, is just to feel completely overwhelmed and exhausted and not want to leave the house because everything just feels too hard. So before I worked out that I was an intuitive empath, I could never understand why I hated going to big shopping centres, but I would always get a headache. I would always feel depressed and jangled. I could go to a small shopping centre and I would be okay. I mean, I don't love shopping, but it's not the shopping centre. It's the fact that I'm in close proximity to a whole lot of people, and every single person who walks past me is having a good or a bad day, and I am feeling their good or bad day. So after I've walked past a couple of hundred people,
you're like Cecil.
Exactly. I want to get the hell out of there.
Do you hear people's thoughts? You keep on showing your gut, your body. Are you very body aware when you're an empath?
It's interesting. I mean, I can't speak for other people, but for me, it's not that I hear it. It's a knowing. It's not a hearing. It's a knowing. So I do feel it in my body. I feel, you know, I think one of the best examples is a friend of mine had a baby and I went to visit her. And she was in hospital in a semi-private ward, and the woman in the bed next door had also just had a baby. And I looked at her and I suddenly felt so depressed. I just really felt overwhelmingly sad and depressed. And I looked at my friend Jenny and I said, that person next to you has got postnatal depression. And she said, how do you know? How do you know? They've been working like they've been social workers and psychologists, and they've been medicating her. And she, you know, they haven't been letting her go out because she just had such a big postnatal depression. And it's not that it wasn't that someone said to me, I'm feeling depressed or whatever. I could just feel it.
Speaking about depression, when you explained how people feel when they completely shut off, it sounded like the little bit I know about depression.
Yeah, I think that depression can very much be that feeling of shut offness. It can also be a feeling of absolute despair and sadness, and a feeling like nothing's ever going to be okay in the world again. So it manifests itself in a couple of different ways. The shut offness, I think, is the coping mechanism, because those feelings of sadness and despair are so overwhelming that if you aren't able to shut that off, then it really is quite dangerous. That's when people start to feel suicidal and to want to kind of take themselves away from it.
Have you ever felt someone's feelings of being suicidal?
Yeah.
Wow.
How did you cope? I mean, did you want to kill yourself?
No, I didn't want to kill myself.
Because you knew it wasn't yours.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. But
by that time, you had figured it out. What if... You know, you're an intuitive empath. You haven't figured it out yet, and you all of a sudden just want to slit your wrist or jump off a building.
Well, I had that with anxiety. So I used to pick up a lot of anxiety. I come from a family where a lot of people have anxiety, and I used to just carry all of their anxiety around. I also had it with insomnia. I used to think I was a terrible sleeper. I had a whole ritual. I was only allowed one cup of tea in the morning. I couldn't have any caffeine after 10 in the morning. I had to have a whole thing because I slept so badly. But I actually worked out about 15 years ago. It's not that I'm an insomniac. It's that when someone I love or I'm close to, even if they're on the other side of the world, is awake and having a bad time, I will wake up in empathy with them. And I worked that out actually when the same friend, a child was in hospital in ICU, and I just couldn't sleep the whole night. And I just knew, and I phoned her in the morning and I said, "We didn't have a very good night last night, did we?" And she said, "No, we didn't."
Do you in that case then get the name of the person that you're feeling for or with?
Yeah. So now what I do is I lie there, if I've got insomnia, for instance, and I think, okay, is this mine? No, it's not mine. Who do I think it belongs to? And I kind of go through in my mind who I think it belongs to. When I hit the right person and I can feel it in my body, I just send them love, hope, send them good wishes, send them, you know, whatever it is that they need, send them peace. And I literally turn over and go back to sleep.
For the person at home who's recognizing what you're saying, how can they go about their day and say, okay, I know it's probably going to hit me, but I need to find, you know, physical ways of closing that empathy thing down so that I can function, because I mean we all do it. I mean, even for people who aren't empaths, you just, you know, you know that some people's energy is negative, some people's energy is positive. You know when someone is taking a little bit of your energy, you can feel it. But now if we speaking empath, then obviously the feeling is exaggerated. So how do you then say, okay, no, my space, get out?
So the first trick is to help people to learn to listen to their bodies and to start becoming aware of what they are feeling, not just emotionally, but also physically. Because until you are aware of what you're, and your body is always talking to you, and it's a very good way of being able to kind of connect with the fact that you are experiencing something.
You know, just hold that thought. Somebody said the other day, your body does not lie. And you know, when they said it, I looked at it, I figured it out. Truth.
Absolutely.
Truth. But anyway, go on.
Yeah, there's a great book called Your Body Speaks Your Mind, which I always think should be called Your Body Speaks Your Emotions.
Wow.
But, yeah, by Deb Shapiro. I use it a lot in my practice. So to tune into your body and to start listening to the signals that your body is sending you. And Martha Beck, who trained me and Liesl, teaches this technique which she calls the body compass, and she says that you can use your body as a compass to help you steer your way. So when you learn the signals that your body is sending you, you will learn to establish that when you are doing something that is right, your body responds in a very particular way, and that means that you headed north. When you are doing something that isn't right for you, your body responds in a very particular way that alerts you to the fact that you're heading away from your true north, your right direction. So I do a kind of an adaptation of that with my clients, which is really just to check in with your body and to see, what are you feeling? Where are you feeling it?
What if you're so out of touch?
Well, some people are, and it takes a long time. And then I have to say, are you feeling hot? Are you feeling cold? Are you hungry? Are you tired? It doesn't matter. It can be any physical sensation. And then so I say, what are you feeling? So maybe they'll say, I'm feeling tired. And then I'll say, why are you feeling tired? And then they'll either say, well, I only went to sleep at 3 o'clock this morning, which is theirs, okay. And if they say, I don't know, I'm not sleeping, I'm feeling anxious or whatever, then we can go into,
I procrastinate, because that's one that makes one feel tired. And we don't remember that.
That's,
you know,
true.
When we're tired, good, but then you think, because you didn't do that thing.
Exactly. But that's a function of not getting enough sleep. If they are feeling tired because they didn't go, it's not that they didn't go to bed early enough because they were procrastinating, but they did go to bed, but they couldn't sleep because they were feeling anxious because we don't know why. If there isn't a real, like if they were writing a test this morning that they were feeling anxious about, that's fine. Then that anxiety belongs to them. If they don't really know why they're feeling anxious, or they think about it and know that it's, I don't know, their child that's feeling anxious about a test. So then I would say to them, does this feeling belong to you?
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't belong to you, then we'll take one avenue of inquiry. If it does belong to you, what do you want to do? So if you're tired because you only went to sleep at 3 o'clock this morning because you were watching, I don't know, Madam Secretary reruns, go to bed earlier tonight. If you're tired because your child is anxious about a test that they want to write, how can you help your how can you help yourself and help your child to feel less anxious so that you don't have to carry their anxiety for them?
And that's a difficult one because you carry it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, your children's anxiety.
Do your proximity to a person determine how much of their emotions you experience in your body?
You mean physical proximity?
Physical proximity, yeah, but also emotional proximity.
Mm. I think for me personally, I think the emotional proximity is more determinant of how much I experience what they're feeling. But I think for some people, so, you know, if I'm walking through Sandton City and someone walks past me with a headache and I suddenly feel a flash of pain, I'm not close to those people. It's just like a physical passing through. But if I'm when I'm very close to someone, and they are going through something, and it's interesting because I don't often feel, I don't have the empathic response if they are aware of what they are feeling.
Oh, is that so?
So
you're like their alert button.
Yeah, I'm like their canary. And it's very interesting, actually. So if a family member is depressed, but they know they're depressed, then I can be there for them in a supportive way. But if they are unaware that they are depressed, then I feel depressed when I'm with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very interesting.
But then it's nice because you can tell them, listen, go sort this
yes.
out.
It depends,
as
you
long
know.
As they're willing to hear it.
And also, you know, when you started, you said, you know, you start softly because not everybody's open. So do people think you're weird?
Some people do.
I mean, people who just meet you. And are you psychic? Are empaths psychic?
That's the thing I wanted to know. I wanted to know what's the difference, because apparently there are, like, I picked up 41 different empaths.
Wow.
We're not going to go into all of them. but you mentioned the intuitive. Mm. So I wondered what is the difference between the psychic and intuitive one?
So, it's a difficult question for me. I'm definitely very intuitive, and I'm definitely an intuitive empath. So for me, an intuitive empath, and I first read about it in the books of a woman called Judith Orloff, mm-hmm. who's a psychiatrist. And she talks about an intuitive empath, and the way she defines it is she says that you intuitively, so without needing to be told, feel what somebody else is feeling. So it's very self-explanatory and intuitive empath. And I definitely am an intuitive empath, and I also am very intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm psychic.
Because, you know, one of the empaths that I picked up was a physical one, and they have, it's also called the healing empath, because what you're describing, there's healing. I mean, it's not like, you know,
Reiki or something.
But I do that also.
Do you?
So there you go. So, but you do like the men, and then a mental one where you also go and, you know, like man, there are so many. There's the one, the animal and plant empaths as
right,
well. So,
yeah.
So I just wondered what the difference would be between the psychic and the intuitive. But we can go
I
on
don't
now.
Know. I must say I don't know, because I don't know what a psychic empath does.
I think it's just levels.
Yeah.
I think it's levels of awareness, because, you know, if you look at what a psychic is, it's someone who knows without being told. That is, well, that's how I see it. And please don't phone in and shoot me. But you have that same gift. You just call it something else.
You see, for me, it's interesting because I have a friend who's a psychic. And so sometimes if there's, you know, if someone loses their dog or if a child goes missing or whatever, they'll phone her and she will think about where they might be and see where they are, and that's psych. And I suppose,
but
it's
isn't
empathy
that
as well.
Clairvoyant.
Yeah.
And you are clairsentient. Hey, look at me, I'm clever.
You are clever.
Judy, so if you pick up on people's negative emotions, can you influence them? Can you send them positive energy and they feel less negative?
I'd like to think that you can, but I'm not sure, because I think that the truth is I'm not taking it away from them. The truth is that I'm just carrying it with them. So it's not like I'm fixing it for them. And I don't think that, I mean, it's theirs. It's there for a reason. Mm. People feel emotions for a reason. And so just kind of sending them positive vibes to help them feel better is not necessarily serving them, because then they're not hearing what the emotions are trying to tell them.
I love what you are saying, because, you know, we had a discussion the other day that we as humans, we don't want to feel what we consider the negative emotions. We only want to feel those highs and the spikes and the joy. Mm. But when it comes to anger and envy and all those things that we have decided are negative, we just push them aside.
And actually, they're very important, because that's, that's where we learn, you know.
That's how we regulate our compass.
Yeah, absolutely. And another... speaking of compass, another Martha Beck tool is she invites her clients to do an energy audit. So she invites people to identify all of the people, places, and activities that they come into contact with in a typical week. And then to check into their body compass and assess, how the energy levels are affected by spending time with those people in those places and doing those things. And the fact is that our bodies are giving us very important information. If you get into a very bad mood every single time you see a particular person and you don't pay attention to that, you're not picking up the message that your emotions are telling you there's something about this person that makes you very angry. And either it's something to do with them or it's pushing something in you or whatever, but it's important information.
We deny it, right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's kind of that thing where I never knew. When I grew up, always heard people say, you know, Jy maak my nar, you know, you make me nauseous. Yeah. I did not realize that that was actually
a thing.
And then in my 30s, I realized that every time I came close to a certain person, I'd become terribly nauseous.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have to run. So it's when we lie, you know, that our body misbehaves and we get into all these troubled thought patterns, physical illnesses and stuff like that.
And if we carry on lying and ignoring our body has to talk to us louder and louder and louder. So it might have started off as just a vague sense of nausea. And it might, if you keep ignoring it, turn into a full-blown migraine or vomiting attack when you see that person. It's, I always say to my clients, it's like, you know, when you have a small child and they want your attention and they say, Mommy or Daddy, look at me. And you're kind of busy and you say, not now, darling, I'll look later. They don't just go away. They keep asking for your attention. They, you know, they whine, they smack you, they cry, they have a tantrum, whatever it is that they have to do, until you say, oh, look at you, aren't you clever? And then once you have paid them attention and given them what they need, they go off and they play off on their own perfectly happily. Emotions are the same. If we don't pay attention, they get louder and louder and louder.
One of the things that I sometimes challenge people to do is to go sit and feel those so-called negative emotions. Because, you know, if you feel an emotion in your body, it never lasts for, I mean, I've never timed it on a watch, but it can't be more than 30 seconds.
Yeah. I know, and it's so scary. But the thing is that because we're so scared of it, we push it and we push it and we push it away. But if we just actually allowed it to be, it's not that scary.
I don't know. You know, that one can put a blanket kind of thing over that. Because if I now think of grief, you know, because now that thing will sit with you. It's not constant, but you might sit for a whole freaking hour and just weep your eyes out.
Absolutely.
And you actually feel the body ache. So it comes and goes, but it's there for like, so maybe it's true in the sense that the body knows how much to time, and then it gives you 30 seconds and then you have your moment, and then another 30 seconds, have your moment, and then until the hour is done.
But I think there's a difference in a message that your body is giving you. So making you feel nauseous because you don't like being in a particular place, or making you feel frustrated because your mother-in-law drives you nuts, or
angry,
whatever it is.
Because someone is driving exactly. really badly.
Exactly. And grief, which is an appropriate response to loss. And so I think it's also very important to learn to differentiate between why am I feeling this feeling. So if I'm experiencing grief because somebody I love just died, what do I want to do with it? I want to just be in the grief and honor that person and honor my own feelings by allowing the grief to be there.
But we're told not to go there and to muddle and to wallow in it and to get on with it.
Well, you're not told
those
that by me.
Are cruel.
No, but I mean, we're speaking in general. What do you say then? Because here's the other thing as well. We can almost all say that we are empaths or that we have empathy, but on the different levels, you might feel it. Crazy bad, and you might feel on another level crazy bad. So isn't it possible that we all are empaths, just in different areas in life?
No, I don't think so, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Which is probably a good thing, because otherwise it would be quite hard for the world to run if all of us were empaths. But I don't think it's true that everybody is an empath.
But we all have empathy at times.
Well, hopefully.
Oh, please say yes.
No, I mean, there have been
not
some
everybody
very,
has empathy.
Yeah,
no,
there have
come
been
on,
some very, very
really?
Interesting studies done. And on empathy, there's loads that you can read about.
And it. People just go like, don't want to feel, don't feel,
well, the
don't know how
the
to.
The Nazi soldiers would not have been able to exterminate 6 million Jews if they had had empathy. How can you, do you know what I mean? You have to, so
yes.
It's not true. Either they were, you know, it was beaten out of them or whatever, but it's not true that everybody has empathy.
Or it's learned behavior, because
learned
you know what,
behavior.
They you take soldiers and they're very
absolutely.
Young, you know, and you tell them, you put the fear of God in them, and you say, when this war is over, you're going to get killed if you don't want to do that,
absolutely.
Or your family.
Yeah.
Do you know, so I think it's like that whole thing of suppressing. So you go and you do what dastardly thing.
Absolutely. But I also think there are their levels, you know. So there's a coping mechanism of, okay, if I need to survive, I need to get on with this and switch off my empathy. And then there were some really, really, really awful things that have been done by people to people that really do show an absolute lack of empathy. But happily they are, I think, in the minority.
Well, Judy, narcissists, they don't have empathy. And from all the reading I've done, empaths seem to have kind of this fatal attraction to narcissists.
Oh, yes.
What's the deal?
I don't know. I think if we came up with the answer to that, we'd make a lot of money.
I just have to tell you, I find it terribly disturbing if you say that there are some people who don't have empathy, because I think even psychos at some point must have experiencing that.
That is one of the defining features of a psychopath, is that
but,
they do not have empathy.
But I know, but at some point they must have.
Nope.
Because then it's like the same for us human beings. At some point I was cruel. At some point I didn't feel. Do you know what I mean? So I'm just going, like, as a human being, you go through all of them, and then the one that's yours, you catch on, or that sits very well. So, but I do want to believe that we all have...
I also want to believe it, but I'm afraid to say, look around the world. I mean, you don't have to look very far, but look around.
Yeah.
There are a few scary people out there who aren't showing a lot of empathy. I'm not going to mention any names. I'll leave it up to you to come up
to
your own
conclusions. Yeah, we don't talk politics on this show, Judy. When we started, you mentioned that you help people with burnout. Now, burnout is obviously, you said, empaths suffer from burnout very easily. How do you then replenish?
Okay, so I have a program where I help my clients to, first of all, we have to regain their energy, and then we have to give them tools to maintain it.
So regain means what?
So the regain is to kind of bring up your energy levels again. So
okay,
to be
how do you
able
do that?
To, you do that by resting largely,
okay,
by
all
resting,
right.
By eating the right food, by cutting out foods and drinks that cause your body to release more cortisol and adrenaline, so you've got to cut out as
I'm
much
so glad
as possible
you said
caffeine
that.
And
what about
carbs and sugar.
Drinking tranquil lights and things that can calm you down? Is that nonsense? Because
tranquilizers.
Yeah, you know.
I do think that sometimes burnout has reached the point where it does need some chemical assistance because your body is so out of whack and it is it's releasing so much adrenaline and the cortisol levels are so high that it actually isn't able to regulate
itself
anymore. But not to get stuck on it. So that's why I always talk about regaining and maintaining. So it's not enough to just say, okay, well, you know, go to bed early for the next 3 weeks and you'll be fine. You've actually got to put in practice structures and routines that support you so that you don't get burnt out again. Because when you have had burnout once, you are more than likely that you are going to get it again. It's like having had a stomach ulcer. If you've had one stomach ulcer, you are more likely to get another stomach ulcer.
Do you think or do you see yourself as a light worker?
I don't really know what the term a light worker, I don't really know what that means. But okay. I like to think I bring light to the world. And I definitely think that a lot of the work that I do with my clients is
assistance.
Not always conscious and not always in the kind of physical realm. But I don't...
So do you feel that you're very different to others?
I don't think I feel very different I think I feel different to some others.
Okay.
I do think that the work that I do is quite particular because I work with a kind of quite a defined target group and I have a very particular set of skills, both intellectual and just what I was born with. Yeah, I mean, I think everyone has their own unique way of being in the world and doing the work that they do.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just thinking, because there are some people who are really like, I'm really a square, you know, in this round hole. And for a long time, because when I listened to you for a long time, you would go like, I need to fit in, you know. And nowadays, there's less emphasis on having to fit in. Mm. There's more emphasis on finding yourself, you know, and being...
Mm. She's very clever because I wanted to go exactly there.
You know, intuitive.
Judy, when, you know, normally if Shemaine starts an interview, because she's much nicer than I am.
I'm more,
you know, the journalist, get down to business, answer these questions. She always starts very softly and very gently. And when we started, I thought, I should have just taken Shemaine's approach and just asked you to tell us how on earth you, because you worked with the police, you were one of these take no prisoners, girls. You worked with the police and then you became a Martha Beck life coach. Now, Martha Beck is not just, I mean, there are so many schools of coaching. Martha Beck's is quite touchy-feely.
Mm-hmm.
How did you end up there? Tell us about you.
Well, I think that I was always meant to end up where I am now, and I just kind of took a bit of a detour. So when I was little, I always knew that I wanted to help people decide what they wanted to be in the world. So that's why I'm a high school guidance teacher.
You really were a teacher?
Yeah.
Okay.
But then I was at university during the last dying days of apartheid, and then I got involved in the policing stuff after the elections, and I just kind of fell into it, and it was really fascinating, and I loved it.
What tiny, did you teach tiny them? Woman in I taught, the policing stuff.
I did change management and community policing and crime prevention.
Look at your body.
And I was 24 at the time, or 25, and I was very tiny.
The stupidity of youth.
I know, exactly.
That's brilliant.
I think to myself, what were you thinking?
I think it's brilliant.
But the truth is that I've always been a very sensitive person. I've always been an intuitive empath. And so I did used to find it very, I loved it and it was very meaningful and it was very important work. And I am always, and I still find it fascinating and I still do some of it. I don't train the police directly. But I got severe burnout. I got like, couldn't scrape myself up from the floor burnout. And I went to my doctor and I said, I'm depressed. And he spoke to me for a while and he said, you're not depressed. You've having a spiritual crisis and you burnt out and you need to take some time off to decide what you want to do with your life.
Oh, where is that? That man was so ahead of his time.
Absolutely. He's amazing. And I took
Is he still alive?
Yeah, sure.
Wow.
And he's still my doctor and he's wonderful. And I took some time off and after 6 weeks, I had been thinking about doing the Martha Beck coaching for 6 years.
And
I woke up and I thought, I'm going to America and I'm going to do this course.
And yay. Judy was the first South African to go to America and be trained by Martha Beck.
I was.
And then she lit so many fires in South Africa. I would love to talk
Yours
more to
one.
You. Mine was one. I'd love to talk more to you, but we've got a watch that says it's time to go.
Already?
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And a Palisa who's giving us cute little smiles, begging us to leave now. Palisa, thank you so much.
Thank
that was
you,
Palisa Mbuye on the controls. And you sat through the whole day today. Awesome.
Oh, and by the way, you were listening to Beyond Ears and Eyes on Cliff Central from the Liesl Tom. Take care.
And from me, Shemaine Harris. Have a wonderful week. Go get the podcast and share it. CliffCentral.com.